Hello everyone, a very warm welcome to the latest episode of the Travel Podcast with me, your host, Hayley Sparks. This week I'm joined by Kitty from the Not Just Travel family. She runs an independent business, Kitty's Travel and Adventures, and we will be tapping into her expertise about trekking in Nepal. Now this is something that I haven't been lucky enough to do, but I know it's a bucket list journey for so many people, so I'm sure the listeners really enjoy this episode. Kitty, welcome to the Travel Podcast.
Thank you very much.
It's lovely to have you, Kitty. I'm really excited to find out more about trekking in Nepal. I know it's a real bucket list destination for a lot of people, and it will appeal to so many of us. But let's start from the beginning and tell me when you went and what inspired you to take that adventure.
So I first went to Nepal in 2010. I'd been planning it for a while. It had been on my bucket list for a long time before that. Because I spend a lot of my downtime in mountains, I love being in the mountains, and I'd had a few friends who'd been to Nepal before I had and told me they thought it would be a place I would love. And also my other side is that I'm a doctor as well as being a travel consultant, and I'd been studying mountain medicine. So I wanted to go and experience altitude and all the things I'd been studying as well. So, yeah, Nepal was definitely the top of my list before I went.
Well, Kitty, that's a very interesting combination to work and be a doctor by profession, but also be a travel consultant. Is that because you wanted to combine both of your passions?
I have a lot of experience in traveling. Some of it's been related to my medicine, like being in Nepal, and some of it's just because I absolutely have loved traveling. I got that love from my parents, and I'm trying to bring that to my business as something extra from medicine, something very different and a different kind of work.
That's really fascinating. So it was so much of your medical study that actually led you to want to experience Nepal for yourself.
So I studied a thing called the Diploma of Mountain Medicine. And as part of that, you learn all about altitude and you learn a lot about all the research and trips that have gone to Everest to understand altitude and altitude sickness. And I got an opportunity after I'd completed that to volunteer in a rescue post in Nepal. So the first time I went out, I actually went just to go trekking because I wanted to experience it as a trekker rather than somebody who was working. That was autumn 2010. And then I was actually there in spring 2011 and spring 2012 volunteering at the rescue post.
Oh, that's incredible. So two very different experiences. When you went initially as a trekker in the first instance, had you done any kind of trekking journeys around the world anywhere else? Or was this your first time?
I'd done the Inca Trail, which a lot of people have done, which is quite short, relatively. It's only 4 to 5 days of trekking. But at least I did have that experience of walking in the mountains and staying and camping and that kind of thing. I'd done some multi-day walks in New Zealand, but again, they're a bit different because you have huts and you have to carry all your camping gear and that. So I had done smaller things, but nothing like the, you know, multi-day treks that you tend to do in Nepal, although there's lots of different sizes of lengths of set treks you can do. But a lot of them are at least 2 weeks so that you can get out into the more exciting places and up into the mountains.
And was it a 2 week trip that you did on your first journey?
I was just looking at my photos actually this morning to remind myself because it is a wee while ago. And yeah, it was I think it was a 14 day trek. Yeah, so 2 weeks in the Annapurna region, going up to Annapurna base camp. So not in the Everest region. I wanted to experience a different region of Nepal. I have also, in the last few years, trekked in Langtang as well, which is another area, as well as my two seasons in the Everest area.
Gosh, you've got so much experience. And let's talk about the kind of preparation, Kitty, for any of our listeners that are thinking of going on a walking holiday or a trekking expedition anywhere around the world. Perhaps they're brand new to it. What kind of preparation would you recommend that people undertake, and sort of how far in advance should they start before their trip?
Well, you certainly need to be fit, because this is multi-day walking. So I certainly tried to increase my level of general walking fitness. I do quite a lot of the Scottish Hills. So, but before my first trip, I actually was going up the Scottish Hills with a great big enormous bag on my back stuffed full of things that I didn't need for that day, but it, just to simulate carrying a big pack and going uphill. So that's one thing, is the just general fitness. And obviously knowing that you've got good boots and your feet are going to be all right. That's really important. But also, obviously, in Nepal, if you're going up into the mountains, you are dealing with altitude, and that's a whole different thing on your body. Fitness does not help you acclimatise. Acclimatisation is really personal. So I would always recommend somebody who wants to go to Everest to go and do some walking and climbing in Europe, for example. For the UK people, that's the easiest place you can get up to altitude, and you can see how you your body acclimatizes, because it's so personal, and the only thing that you can predict is whether you've done well previously at altitude. So you can't predict it by age or sex or fitness or anything like that. It's all about your personal experience.
And with altitude, is it just the sickness that is the impact, or what sort of medically, how does it affect the body?
I could give you a whole medical lecture on that, but that's not what we're here for. So it's all about the lack of oxygen. It usually starts about 2,500 to 3,500 meters, and there's various levels, but the thing most people feel if they go up too quickly is called acute mountain sickness, and it makes you feel, it kind of feels like a hangover is the best description. You get headache, you feel dehydrated, you feel sick, you don't want to eat, it's not fun. I've had it actually somewhere else entirely that I haven't even spoken of yet, which was on Kilimanjaro. When I was very young, I got acute mountain sickness, and it's not very fun, and you need to go down. But it's pretty easy to avoid if you go up the mountain slowly and you do some research about it beforehand. And the best thing is to talk to somebody like me, from the point of my put with my medical hat on, somebody who's a mountain medicine doctor, to really understand the ins and outs of looking after yourself in the mountains. And it's really important, because it is, a lot of people, this is a once in a lifetime trip. They've spent a lot of time and effort getting the money to book it and training. And I know people who gave up smoking who'd been lifelong smokers because they're desperate to get to Everest Base Camp. So you really need to be prepared and educate yourself about altitude sickness.
Brilliant. So I'm sure you've got obviously all the medical knowledge, but the hints and tips that people can obviously take on board before they embark on a trip like this to try and minimize the chances of that being a problem for them. So preparation is really key. That's fascinating. And let's talk about your first impressions when you arrived in Nepal. Had you done a lot of research? Was it what you were expecting?
I'd heard about it from my friends who'd been there before me, but I don't think anything prepares you certainly for arriving in Kathmandu, although I guess it's similar to some other Indian cities. But yeah, Kathmandu is a pretty crazy place. It's, I love it, but yeah, when you land in the airport, you really need to know what you're doing and where you're going. There's a lot of people trying to distract you and help you. Sorry, it's using apostrophes, which won't come up on the podcast. But yeah, it's so exciting to get there for the first time. Usually, unfortunately, you can't see the mountains from Kathmandu because of the smog. But yeah, it's a very unique city, and it's a great place to spend a bit of time before you go up to the mountains, A, because it helps with the acclimatization because it is a little bit higher, but also it's got some amazing sights and loads of other trekkers and travelers around, and you can buy lots of, if you haven't got kit, you can buy good kit at good prices in Kathmandu. So yeah, I always recommend people spend a few days there before they even think about heading to the mountains.
A nice way to ease yourself in, for sure. And let's talk about a typical day. So once you began the trek, for people who've never done it, sort of from waking up to hitting the trail, and also sleeping arrangements, because people might not have a clue how it all works.
So I love the simplicity of it, because the only thing you have to do each day is walk to the next place. That's like your whole day, and be in a wonderful environment. So it's, yeah, certainly back in the old days, there wasn't even any mobile signal. So you really were out there not knowing what was happening. These days, there's a lot of very good mobile signal up in the valleys in Nepal, which is great for the locals. But yeah, you, depending on the treks, some treks are camping treks. So you'll be camping every night. It's very comfortable camping. You're very well looked after by all the local trekking companies. Otherwise, you're in tea houses, which are run by the locals. And they are great places to stay. You meet other people. My first trek, I was on my own, and I ended up meeting loads of people and walking with another person who was walking on their own for a few days, going in the same direction. Yeah, so you get up, if you're camping, you'll get a cup of tea brought to you in the tent, which is very nice, and then have your breakfast. In the tea houses, they'll have various different things for breakfast, and you all sit around in the communal eating area. And then, yeah, get your stuff packed up for the day and, as you say, hit the trail. And the amount of time you're going to walk each day is very different, because if you're actually ascending, then quite often it's quite a short day's walking, depending on where you are, because you don't want to go up too quickly, because you don't want to get altitude sickness. So some days aren't very long, and I know certainly there's some people that kind of struggle with the fact that you don't go very far. Some days you don't go very far, so you might be at your destination by lunchtime because you've gone up enough altitude and you shouldn't go up anymore. So you also just need to learn to just enjoy it, take it slowly. There'll be tea houses along the trail where you can stop. I always have fresh mint tea when I stop at the tea houses. But obviously they'll always have the Nepalese chai, which is a very milky tea with spices in it. Unfortunately, I love everything about Nepal apart from the tea.
an acquired taste, is it, Kitty?
Yeah, well, it's like you get chai here now. So, you know, back in the day, you didn't get it here. But, yeah, it's just not to my taste, but they always have fresh mint tea. And, yeah, when you get to your tea house, you can, in the next village, you can just spend the afternoon chilling out, wandering around, reading. Always recommend people to take usually a Kindle or equivalent e-reader with plenty of books on it, because you do, yeah, there's plenty of downtime. And sometimes you just end up sitting around in the tea house, or if you're camping, around the table in your camping area, which will have been set up by your company before you get there, and just chatting with everybody and seeing, you know, you get to know, meet loads of different people of international, from all sorts of countries, so it can be very interesting. And then dinner, and well, I was laughing because I was looking at my photos from my first trip earlier, and I'd taken pictures in the menus, because sometimes the English is pretty funny on the menus, but you always get what they're going on about. And all, I mean, the tea houses do incredible food, considering they're usually working on one or two little kerosene burning stoves. They make great food, but I'd always recommend having the dal bhat, having the local rice and curry, because it's always the best thing on the menu.
So how much of your sort of kit and gear are you responsible for? Because obviously the camping at different stops, how heavy will it be?
Yeah, most of the time people are on organized trips, so they'll just be carrying their day pack, and the company that they're going with will carry all the other stuff. I have done trips when I've carried my own things, but that was after I'd already been on a kind of more organized thing. So yeah, you can kind of choose your level. There are a lot of the suppliers that we have through Not Just Travel, most of them will do a kind of fully organized trip, either in a tea house or a tent, depending on where you're going. Then you can do that. Some places will organize a solo trip where you can just have one porter guide who'll carry your bags, big bags for you, so you can carry your kind of just your day pack yourself.
Especially for beginners, that sounds
I would recommend the first time you go to at an absolute minimum get a porter guide who's going to carry your bag if you really don't want to go with an organized trip. But I really found the organized trips are great, because then you can spend your time enjoying being there and not having to worry about the logistics. And you're also a lot of the companies, even if you're booking with an international company, like one of our suppliers, they will use local companies to actually provide the service. And you're providing a lot of employment for Nepalese people from all regions, you know, flock to work within the mountainous areas, because it's one of the biggest incomes they have in Nepal. So it is important that they get employment. I mean, you can have big arguments about whether tourism is good or bad, but this is a very important part of money flowing into Nepal is tourism.
Yeah, great to be able to give back to the local community when you're on your trip as well. And I'm always just in awe of people who work in those jobs, the level of fitness that they have, strength that they have to be able to carry that equipment for people to set up the tents, to be so fit and strong is always remarkable to me. So I find that really interesting. Kitty, there must have been so many magical moments on your trek that really stayed with you. Is there anything in particular that springs to mind?
On that first trip in the Annapurna region, there was lots of great things. There was being able to go at the end of a trekking day, walk down to some natural hot springs at one of the places I stayed, which was fantastic after a day of trekking. And one of my favourite memories was the getting up early to watch sunrise at Annapurna Base Camp. That was incredible, with the kind of the circle of mountains around you, and the light just changing and changing, and all the mountains appearing. And obviously there was a lot of other trekkers there too, but everybody was just enjoying it and taking pictures. And the pictures, even from my terrible old camera from that, are absolutely amazing. Yeah, there's just loads of great memories of lots of different places. And I love the mountains. So for me, just, seeing, you know, the first time you see Everest, the first time I trekked in the Everest region, and that first spotting of Everest way in the distance, it doesn't look very exciting, but that's it. That's Everest. That was a pretty special moment.
Oh, I can imagine. And was there anything that surprised you, or anything unexpected during the trek?
I mean, I'm sure there was lots of things. It's quite a long time ago now. You're trekking, so you're feeling like you're really out in the mountains, but then obviously there's a lot of Nepalese people living there, and you'd be like plodding along with your walking poles and your water, and you know, out, and then the school kids would just come running past you doing their kind of 5 miles up the mountain or down the mountain to school, all dressed beautifully in their school uniform. And the girls always have plaits with little bows in their hair. And they're just like, that's just their, you know, walk to school in the morning. And you're like...
Wow, you wouldn't expect that. You would, yes, that wouldn't spring to mind, would it, on a trip like that? To that's very unexpected, but how lovely to see the children and just taking it all in their stride. It's their normal day-to-day life, so it's nothing particularly out of the ordinary for them, is it?
No.
Oh, that's incredible. We talked a bit about the kit, the clothing. I think your tip of having a Kindle with you is great. And obviously weighing less than carrying multiple books on your back. Good footwear obviously goes without saying, making sure that you've really broken any sort of shoes in before the trip. Have you got any other tips when it comes to kit or things that you'd say are really essential to have with you?
My trekking poles, I never actually used them before I first went to Nepal. Now I use them for everything, even in Scotland. But there's a lot of downhill and uphill. I love the Nepali say, they say Nepali flat. That just means that you end up at the same level you started at, even if you've gone up and down and up and down and up and down to get there. But yeah, there's depending on which trek you're doing, there can be long periods of downhill, particularly can do your knees in on stone paths. So yeah, I definitely recommend trekking poles. My other favorite piece of kit was a UV light water sterilizer, because you can't drink the water directly out of the streams. That's not safe. And the water, you can buy water that's been boiled at all the tea houses, but that's using kerosene, which has to be brought up the mountain. So that's using very limited resources. So yeah, I have a little light sterilizer, so I can fill up your bottle just from the streams by the side of the trail, and then as long as it's not got too many bits in it, you can just stick your little light sterilizer or UV sterilizer in. And I never got sick using that, and it's really lightweight little thing, brilliant. You can just put it in your day pack, and it makes a huge difference to your ability to stay hydrated, which is really important to one of the ways of avoiding acute mountain sickness is staying hydrated.
That sounds like a fantastic piece of kit. Yeah. Looking back, Kissy, I was obviously been a life-changing experience for you, but would you say there anything that you would have done differently on that first trek?
I took too many clothes. you don't need too many changes of clothes. At the tea houses, you can usually wash your clothes out. So yeah, minimizing what you're carrying, I think, is important. But making sure you got really warm kit, because it can get pretty cold. Depends at the ends of the seasons, it can get pretty cold at night up in the mountains. And I had a really old down jacket that was kind of held together with gaffer tape and things. That first season, and I just didn't keep me warm enough. So yes, lightweight warm gear, that is key.
Brilliant. And what advice would you give to anyone listening who's dreaming of trekking in Nepal but maybe they're not quite sure where to start?
Well, as I said before, there's you don't have to commit to a big long trek all the way up to Everest Base Camp if you really want to experience Nepal, but you're not really into your trekking, then you can visit Kathmandu. I would recommend, if you wanted to do something short, introductory, the easiest thing is going to Pokhara, which is another town west of Kathmandu's well-known tourist destination. It's got a lovely lake, and from Pokhara you can do some pretty short 3 or 4 day trips, or just do a day where you go and do a walk. There's a local temple up on the hill, and you can get a bit of the you can see the mountains, so you can kind of get the ethos of the mountains and trekking and that kind of thing without actually, yes, committing to having to walk for 2 weeks. And it's a lovely town. I haven't been for a while. It's developed a lot, but yeah, it sits on a beautiful lake. You can see Machu Picchu, which is a famous mountain in that region, and it's a great place to hang out as well after you've been to the mountains.
That sounds like a great introductory place for people to start and maybe test the water, see how they feel, and perhaps then that might give them confidence if they want to do one of the longer treks, but just sort of start off with that. Sounds like a really, really good idea. Kitty, obviously you've done so much. What's next on your bucket list?
In terms of Nepal, well, I want to take my partner there because he hasn't been, and do a bit more exploration in the Annapurna region because I only did that original trek in 2010. So I'm hoping next year maybe that we're going to go and do a trek in a different part up, maybe beyond Annapurna. There's new areas opening up closer to the Tibetan border, which are less affected by change. There's been a lot of roads built around the Annapurna area. So trekking companies are trying to find more areas that are less built up, more like the Annapurna used to be back in the day. So it'd be great to go and explore some of those, like Mustang, Dolpo, those regions that are a bit more off the beaten track.
Oh, Kitty, well, I am inspired by your sense of adventure and all the things that you've done already and that you want to do. I find it really inspiring, and I'm sure it will inspire other listeners to give it a go. Any sort of final words to people listening that are considering Nepal or just trekking in general?
Just do it. It's just for me, it's one of the most can't really explain it, like it's not spiritual, but that kind of thing. I just find being in the mountains incredibly good for my soul, especially in this crazy world at the moment. And if you don't know where to start, start by talking to somebody who's been there and knows that, like you're, and can help you decide what you want to do, where you want to go, so it makes it the trip that you want.
Yeah, that's great advice. So you can tailor the experience exactly, make it bespoke for you. Well, Kitty, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast today and share your memories and all your tips for trekking in Nepal. It's been really lovely to have you on.
No problem. As I said, I could talk about this for much longer.
I will have to have you back another time.
Thank you very much, Hayley.
Thanks, Kitty. And thank you so much for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode, please take mere seconds to rate and review or share with anyone else that you know or who will enjoy listening, or perhaps trekking Nepal is on their bucket list. Also, remember that you can reach back out to the travel consultant that sent you this podcast if you're interested in a similar trip, if you want help and advice for any of your future travels. They are there to help you. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to your company next week.